Hello, and welcome to Rule of Carnage. I'm Glenn Ford, a games designer and games developer, and I'm here having a chat with my good chum, Mike Hutchinson.
I'm Ford Glenn. I'm a designer of games and a maker of Michaels.
We are here to talk about designing better miniatures games. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to have a little chat about something that has been brought up by a comment from a viewer of the YouTube channel. Sander Vanjik said, I listen to podcasts over and over. Can you talk about dice pools and why take one dice over another? So we're going to have a little conversation about dice pools. What they offer as a sort of mechanical element within your game, and a little bit just quickly about probability and using different dice, and maybe some slightly more practical reasons about why to sort of go with one dice or another.
I'm going to offer some very impractical and aesthetic reasons as well.
Is this you and D4s again? For those who aren't aware, in A Billion Suns, there's a little mention that A Billion Suns uses many different shaped dice, but not D4s because they're gross. And that was in there in the first draft. And I said, you have to leave that in because it's one of the most Mike Hutchinson comments in the entire thing. I think a little while ago, they did a FIFA edition of one of our tabletop game, and they used D12s with D4 faces on them, and there was a campaign to make all D4s into D12s with three D4 markings on them, because D12s are lovely to roll and D4s are awful.
Very underused dice, the D12. Not only does it roll very well, but it has the mystical properties of the number 12, which is divisible by lots of lovely other numbers.
So that's a great way to sort of lead into the first reason to use different dice is going to be largely a mathematical thing about probability and probability relationships. If you haven't taken a look at some just basic, it doesn't need to be hardcore mathematics about dice probability, it is well worth picking up. There's plenty of really good books on this. Rainier Kinesia. Dr. Kinesia has written a book called Dice Games Properly Explained, well worth picking up. He absolutely knows what he's talking about.
Mike makes a note to buy this book.
But just on a very basic level, when you roll any given dice, you have an even distribution of probabilities across all the faces. So if you roll a D6, the odds of rolling a 6 are exactly the same as rolling a 1, which hopefully everybody has had mentioned to them when they... You know, I don't think anybody else had this experience, but when somebody said that to me when I was like 8, it was like, no, a 6 is harder to roll, definitely, because a 6 is inherently better. So and then when you get to D6, you have a bell curve of probabilities, where a 7 is more likely than any other number. So while it is just as likely to roll 2 6s as a 1 and a 6, it is, however, more likely to roll a 7, because you can get a 7 by rolling a 1 and a 6, a 2 and a 5, a 3 and a 4, a 4 and a 3, and so on. There are more combinations that will make a 7.
Do you know how I learned that? When I originally got a set of Settlers of Catan back in the mid-90s, and the numbers that you place on the board of Settlers of Catan were different sizes depending on their relative probability. The font was larger.
If you have a scientific calculator, there's a little thing that's an exclamation point. That's for doing factorials. Probabilities are based on factorials. But the point is, when you roll more than one dice and you add up the totals on the faces of the dice to make a single number, the spread of probability of that dice becomes more predictable. It has a spread that is more controlled. And it allows you to control the probabilities that are going to be incoming in your game. And it's one of the slightly counterintuitive things that the more dice players roll, the less outlandish probability and chance there is in a game. And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If you say you play out the whole game, and at the end of the game you roll one dice, and whoever rolls wins the roll off of that one dice wins the game, that game is obviously totally random. If you have a game where you say, okay, every turn in this game everyone rolls 100 dice, and then you take the average of those 100 dice every turn, and you use that to define some part of the game. Where it's like, well, those 100 dice can be really predictable. The average is almost certainly going to be the average of a dice. If you roll out a bucket of 100 dice and they all come up sixes, something really bizarre has happened. So the main reason to use bunches of dice is to make the spread of probability within your game predictable, and so make it so that people can get properly rewarded for the decisions that they made. You can make something that's meant to happen repeatedly. You can give somebody rewards for shooting for a risky opportunity, and you can have outlandish things happen in a way that's not going to happen every single turn or every single bit of the game. Now, why in a technical mathematical way to use different shaped dices, different polynomial dice? As Mike alluded to in our first conversation there, the reason that things like circles have 360 degrees rather than 100 degrees or 200 degrees is that certain numbers are a lot easier to fit other numbers into and other probabilities into. So a 6 and a 12 are rather lovely numbers because you can fit other things into them. You can fit 3s and 2s and 6s and 4s all into them. So it's much easier to embed predictable probabilities and satisfying repeat numbers within your game and allow your players to get a bit better of a hook onto your game. And I've just, you know, because I know that I've been talking a little bit at a run here, I will say one of the big things about using different polynomial dice to bear in mind is most people understand the spread of probability on a D6 by, you know, adulthood, just because you've come across 2D6 rolling a lot in your life. Most people know, you know, from various games and whatnot, that 7 is most likely, a 12 is pretty outlandish, and 6 to 8 is where the meat of it is. Give people 2d8s, 2d10s, 2d12s, their heads will start to fracture a little bit if you ask them to figure out what the likely roll of 2d12s. And by God, don't ask somebody to roll a d8 and a d12 and figure out what the most likely result is and lay a bet on that. And if you're doing it with 3 or 4 dice, you're essentially throwing people into a totally random set of decisions. You cannot reasonably ask a player to roll a D6, a D8, a D12 all together and judge what the likely result is and base their decision making on that. Most people just don't have that capacity. And if you're asking them to do that, you may as well ask them to make a completely random decision. Mm. Right. So, Mike, I know you have very definite sort of opinions and technical positions on dice pools. Which was a part of the question here that I think you'd like to open up on.
Yeah, so I guess like to talk a bit about how I approach the dice mechanics in my designs, there's a few things that I worry about. One is how bad I am at adding numbers together. So one of the things that I don't tend to design is dice score comparison systems. So a really good example of one that just melts my brain is Infinity. I cannot compute the comparative dice roll mechanic of Infinity. Firstly, it uses two opposing D20s. D20, just personally speaking, is not a dice I've grown up with. I didn't play D&D, I played Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay and Call of Cthulhu. So I think in, much like a European, I think in D100s, I don't think in D20s. So not only is it an alien dice to me, but it's also two very large spreads of numbers. You've got like between 2 and 40 kind of on these two dice. And then you have to do a couple of really confusing things for me, which is you have to take a large spread of numbers, you know, maybe it's a 14 or something, and you have to add another really large number to it, like a 7. And you're like, okay, I have to do that. And then I have to do it on the other side. And then I have to compare the difference between them. And I'm having to do a lot of mental calculation to find out exactly where things are going from. I don't enjoy that at the table, and so I don't design games which ask people to do math, because I'm just not very quick at it on the table. What I like to do is be told, what is the number I'm looking for? A 4, And again, maybe this is because of my gaming heritage, and I grew up, you know, playing Games Workshop games with, you know, throwing a bunch of dice and looking for threes up or something. And so a dice pool system for me does one really, really simple thing, which is it means that I can look at a set of dice and I can see very quickly what the result is, and I don't have to have any mental overhead of mathematics. So getting maths out of my wargaming experience is like one of the core reasons why I tend to write dice pool systems. And as a side effect of this, I tend not to write modifiers. So it's very, very standard to have a set of modifiers to a dice result, like hardcover -2, you know, shooting whilst running -1, blah, blah, blah. Like, not only do I find those quite tedious to look up and memorize, but also that amount of additional maths where I have to like do the thing to figure out what it is. Like, that's okay if it's a dice pool system, because I can do the math once, get to, okay, I need six ups, and then I'm just throwing the dice and looking for six ups. But I do tend to avoid those for the same reason. When it comes to what dice to throw in the dice pool and how many, I guess there's a few things that I think about. One is that lots of people have lots of D6s, and it's fun to roll D6s, and they're a nice regular shape and they roll nicely and so forth. And the other is that, as you said, like, if you're trying to get, there's a part of the design which is, am I looking for unpredictable or spiky results, or am I looking for very normalized, you know, predictable with some outliers? So an example for this is, like, in Gaslands, I'm quite happy for the combat to be quite spiky. Like, it sort of mostly does what you expect, but sometimes it really spikes out. Whereas in the current design that I've been working on, Hobgoblin, for reasons of the like aesthetics of that game, I want that game to be much more predictable. And when I put one unit into another unit, I've got fairly good idea about what the combat result is, to the point where, like, you know, that game has almost had luck removed from it several times, because I think that there are much more interesting decisions and resolution mechanics in play than the specific dice pool. So in that case, I'm going for a large spread of dice that I can predict nicely. And so you get like that control over what's the results that you want the players to experience. And if you choose a D20, you are saying, you're making a deliberate design act, which is, I want there to be a lot of variability and wackiness in the results. And that might be exactly what you're going for. But if you have in your mind an idea about roughly where you want the game, the result of a particular system to go for, then pick a smaller dice, or better still, pick a lot of dice and get them to roll 10 of them or whatever, so that it works out that. Yeah. And then I guess the other thing, like the other like really natural thing that I do, is when I'm about to write down, like, here's the dice system, I'm asking myself, in my mind, I'm sort of saying, am I trying to focus or bias the spread of results to a particular point? And that's where I will tend to go for like a 2d6 or something, where it's like, I want a spread of results, but I want certain results to be more common. So this happens quite often when I'm designing like scenario tables, or like the number of terrain pieces or something. Like, I know roughly what I want most games to feel like, and then I'm okay with the occasional outlying game where it's like, oh, we rolled a 12 for terrain pieces and now it's a crazy busy game rather than something else.
That seems like a good place to take a quick break.
Another thing is like the pure aesthetics of the dice. And this is, if not somewhat mystical, but like somewhat a sort of authorial decision, which is, I will get hooked on the idea that a certain game is like it's in a number. And so I was working on something recently, which I can't say the name of on air because it's too rude, but I was working on a cultists game. And like, that game is obsessed with the number 5 because of pentagrams and because of the law of 5 and because of like a number of like, and so that for me, like, that drove the decisions about the dice, was like the number 5 was very important to that game. And there are other reasons why, like, you might sort of, I don't know, you might just irrationally catch on to a particular dice. in Hobgoblin, for example, for a long time, the system worked with D10s because units started with 10 wounds, and like the number 10 was very significant throughout that game. Eventually ended up, because it was a dice pool system, I ended up swapping it out for D6s because of the sort of final, or nearly the final thing, which is like how many discrete results are useful to you in your design. So the D6 is sometimes sort of lambasted for not having much, it doesn't have many discrete places. So if you want to adjust if you want to adjust the goodness of a fighter in a D6 system, like you only have sort of five spaces on that rung to say, well, I have really crummy fighters and really quite excellent fighters, and there's a few in between, but really that's all I've got. Whereas if you're in a role-playing game situation where you want, you know, infinite variability, then you might go for a D100. It's like, well, you know, people can go from 9 to 100, and there are all of the granular variabilities in between. So quite often when I'm designing a skirmish game, I will think about using larger numbered dices because I'm interested in, well, actually, the difference between skill 7 and skill 8 might be meaningful in a way that I can't capture with a smaller dice. And then the other thing is, as a dice system is emerging, one of the things I worry, or I wonder about, I'm thoughtful about, is do I need to know how many successes there were, or is it a binary outcome? And quite often there's no correct answer for that. It's just like, as I'm feeling my way through the design, sometimes it's nice to know whether you succeed or whether you fail. And sometimes, and there are lots of systems, the Infinity one is one of these, I think, where the difference by which you succeed or fail kind of delivers you the number of successes, or obviously in a dice pool system, very classically, like how many successes did I generate? And in some cases, I've like built a dice pool system, like the one in Perilous Tales, where like the default of that system was you only needed to score one success out of all of your dice pool in order to move forward with that test. And like at that point, you have to look at that system and go, why are you a dice pool if all I need is one success? Is it just that I'm fishing for successes? Would this be better as a 2d6 system or something?
As an answer to why to use a dice pool, is that dice pools make your results more predictable. If I roll 1d6, there's actually quite a sort of, it's a very random result. If I'm looking for rolling 1d6 and I need a 4 or more, and I need at least half of all of my results to be successful, then it's a genuine 50-50 flip. If I'm rolling 10 or 20 or 30 dice, the probabilities become much more flattened out and much more predictable. And the point is, dice pools are only genuinely useful for flattening out averages and predictability if you roll a lot of dice. If you have somebody only rolling a handful of dice in a dice pool, then you're not flattening out the probability particularly. And particularly, again, as the number of faces on the dice goes up, the number of dice you need in the pool to flatten the probability out also goes up. So if you roll 10d6, you'll probably average, you know, close to the average spread of the results on a d6 in that given pool. If you roll 10d20s, you'll still have a quite outlandish and spotty collection of results. And this goes into one of the practicalities about why to use certain dice in certain dice pools, and that is that most people don't own enough D20s to build a dice pool in order to make the probability flat enough to be worth bothering to use a dice pool of D20s. If you're using D20s, the minimum number of dice you need to have a theoretical, you know, probability spread across the dice is 20. Because you should theoretically get one of each number, which is of course never going to happen if you
and you'd actually want considerably more than that to make it exactly a bit more coherent. Like when we're writing D6 dice pool systems, we're aiming for like 10, 12, 15 D6s to make sure that it tends to land in about the right spot, and you don't get wildly divergent or edge results too often.
Yeah, exactly. If you roll 20d20, you're not going to get a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to do it on the dice. That would be an insane thing to have happen. You know, if you roll 20 d6s, there's a pretty good chance you'll get 3 1s, 3 2s, 3 4, or something close to that spread, the spread of probability on the on d6s. In order to get the spread for d20s, you're going to need to roll like 100 dice to spread that out. And people don't own 100 d20s.
I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked just yesterday when I was reading the Dune role-playing game from Modiphius. And that says I need up to 5 d20s. And I was like, crumbs, lads.
I was just reaching over a second ago. Those are all the D20s I own. That's a lot of D20s for a person to own. That's still...
And you're a games designer.
That's like 15 D20s. That's a bizarrely large
number. So if I may address one elephant in the room then. So because you've said if we're using funny shaped dice, make sure that you roll a fair number of them, otherwise they will be very spiky and you won't even them out. So A Billion Suns is a game that uses both dice pools and funny dice, and really just only a couple of dice in each kind. So it's quite quite regular to see a battleship, for example, rolling 2d12 as one of its attacks, where actually that's not 2d12, that's a dice pool of 2d12s, both needing a specific target number. That's another problem with dice, is that you write 2d12.
Yeah, and I mean, as you well know, the point in A Billion Suns is that is the nature of the silhouettes within A Billion Suns that change the worthwhileness of a given dice. And so whilst you're rolling dice pools, it's not the size of the pool that's important, it's the silhouette that you're firing it at. And that's obviously another thing where if you've got a dice pool of 4d20s, and you allow people to alter the target number all the way up to, like, you know, 19 or under as a hit, or 2 or over as a hit, it doesn't matter that they're only rolling 4d20s, because you've made the results super predictable. They're all going to hit, aren't they? If you're rolling 4d20s, needing a 2 or more, you're going to get 4 hits. But if you are rolling the dice pool in order for it to take advantage of the inherent nature of the dice pooliness of it, if you see what I mean.
Because when you
shift the target number up or down, and then the big dice that you're rolling is more likely to hit because it has very few of those numbers on the big dice, you know, A Billion Suns isn't really taking advantage of the nature of a dice pool. It's taking advantage of the fact that there are lots of numbers on a D12, and if you only need to roll 2 or more, you'll hit, whereas if you're rolling D6s, you might well not hit. If you're rolling a dice pool and taking advantage of the nature of the way that a dice pool interacts with probability, you need a lot of dice and more dice with more faces. And it's interesting because Games Workshop sells those dice cubes, which come with three layers of 9 dice, so you get a 9, 18, 27 dice in a dice cube, and that's not a random number of dice in there. That means you've got 24 dice, and 24 d6s means that you're rolling 4 sets of 6, and that becomes a very, very predictable bunch of dice to roll. That will give you some very predictable results if you're saying roll X many dice and a 3 or more is a hit, or a 5 or more is a hit. If you roll 24 dice, you can pretty much say, yeah, you'll probably get 8 hits, you know, or 6 hits, or however many hits it happens to be within the probability. Realistically, consider the practicalities of what you are asking your players to own when you build a dice pool with weird polynomial dice in it. That's just something to consider. And if you're going to do it with D4s, luckily you don't have to ask people to own a lot of D4s because they don't have very many faces on, but don't ask people to roll D4s because it's a cruel and unusual punishment.
And with that, we'll take a quick break.
We write games for normal dice. We don't have the luxury of like custom printed dice, except I did it with Gaslands. But yeah, there's a whole separate thing over there.
It's a tricky question of custom faced dice and what you get out of them.
The world of Kickstarter games is currently obsessed with them. And, you know, I'm not against them. I use them for Skid Dice for a very specific reason, which is like I wanted a system that very neatly interacted with the rest of the components, which, you know, I think is like when they're used well, it's like there's an icon and it links over here and it links over there. But in many regards, it's just like it's just a D3, but, you know, it's got some blank dice and it's got some blank faces and one with two and one with three. And it would have been just like, it's a D6 minus four. Like it's the same. There's a meta reason for choosing a particular dice or a kind of setup, which is in some regards, there are great traditions that you can plug into by choosing certain dice types. So because I am choosing a, you know, dozen or more D6s, like it's speaking to the Warhammer player or the 40k player. Like it's not an accident that Joe McCulloch chose a single d20 for Frostgrave. He was trying to evoke D&D encounters with that single mechanical choice. He said, this is going to be a game where you play a D&D encounter. See, it has a single d20. I have written one or two, but they haven't made it to publish. Like choosing a D100 is basically saying this is going to be a crunchy, detailed role-playing type experience. At least that's what I end up feeling like I'm communicating. So I think there's also a very cultural wiring reason why you might choose one dice type or another. And I think that's one of the reasons why certain games designers, myself included, are quite attracted to the D12, because it has very little cultural baggage in the history of tabletop gaming. It's a very underused dice, and therefore it's quite free from baggage in a way that the D20 or a bucket of D6s are not.
Yeah, it's interesting because a D12 is mathematically interesting, I think, in a way that a D8 isn't. Mm. Personally, I just think D8s are quite ugly. I think I feel the way about D8s that you
just two D4s stuck together, rancid little beast.
This is just random and personal, but at least a D4 has the decency to land in it's then even and symmetrical. A D8 is all lopsided when it lands. It's got a gap.
Same with the D10. Like somebody needs to design a better D10. That is not a beautiful dice.
Hmm.
It's fiddly and it often falls off its. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, I mean, the D12 is a lovely dice to roll, and
it's the king of dice. It's the connoisseur's choice.
Yeah. But the thing is,
they're not as faffy as a D20. It's not as, not as obstinate as a D8.
I mean, the thing about D20s is how small the faces are, and they never quite, if you have any kind of softness to your table, they just won't settle.
Hmm.
And I think that D8s, be turning up more and more, and I mean it's interesting because X-Wing the Miniatures game used D8s,
custom faces, no
custom,
less
custom face D8s at that. There's an option to claim D12 for your very own, and there's definitely an option to do interesting mathematical things with D12s. So as I say, you know, if you are pondering the nature of the dice in your game, there is a little bit of technical maths that you have to sort of get your arms around.
Oh, we should plug anydice.com. That's where I do a lot of my work. So quite often when I'm in the middle of a gnarly bit of dice planning, I'll grab a piece of paper or a spreadsheet, realize that I can't remember how to do the math, and I'll head over on to anydice.com, which is like a dice calculation scripting thing where you can ask it to produce charts based on your utterly bizarre resolution system, and it's very flexible to figure things out.
There's a thread on Board Game Geek which is post probability questions here, in which some very sort of smart at maths people will genuinely crunch your probability questions to a point that will make your head spin if you want them so to do.
And there's an interesting point here, which you brought up again the earlier, but I'm just going to underline, which is there are two kinds of probability at play when you're designing a game. There is the player-facing probability, which is what are you asking the player to understand and predict in order to make good decisions? And then there's the inner-facing, like, hidden probabilities, which is regardless of whether they experience it or recognize it in any way, like what mechanistically does your game kind of, how does it unpack itself on the table? And as a games designer, you have to worry about both of them a lot. And I think you need to be really aware of which one is which. Because not all of the probability in your game is going to be player facing, and that's okay. But the probability that is player facing needs to not require you to post on your probability questions here threads on Board Game Geek, because people won't enjoy that.
You can say to people you need to beat a given target number with a set of dice, and then people know more dice is better. Mm. The more dice I have, the more likely I'm to be that target number. And they know if the target number is high, they're less likely to beat it. And if it's low, they're more likely to beat it. So they can make intelligent decisions about that. If you ask them to roll 2d6, they know that if they're aiming at a 7 or better, they've got a very, very good chance. You know, as soon as they get to like a 9 or better, their chances go right down and so on. If you're asking them to calculate the probabilities of getting a given number, if they're rolling 3 or more dice, that's a bit unfair on them, really. You need to, if you're asking them to predict the probabilities of an outcome of a set of dice, give them a reasonable expectation of being able to do it. You know,
actually, this is one of the reasons that D10 are so nice, particularly if you're European. Maybe if we were writing the Victorian times, we would have all been using D12s in our imperial measurement Kickstarter campaigns. But one of the great things about using D10s for dice pools is that, like, people can latch on very easily to, like, 80% chance of success because I need an 8 or under. So you can
make the internal mathematics of the probability as difficult and crunchy as you like, but make sure you have a handle on what the internal probability of the game is, because you need to understand how likely a given event is to come off in order to be able to give a satisfying experience to your players, even if they don't understand it. Things that are outlandish and unusual should happen rarely, and guys that are good at doing thing X should do thing X on a reasonably sort of regular basis. And if you are asking people to take risks and to make bets and to make plans based on probability, make it a probability that a reasonable average person has a reasonable chance of getting a shot of understanding what the odds are. I think those are the two most important rules when you're picking dice pools and the different dice within your game. If you're using a dice pool, remember you need probably the number of face on the dice times least 2, preferably 3, and ideally 4 in order to get a relatively flat probability distribution within the given pool. And less than that, understand that you're coming to a point where you might as well not be using a pool, you know, as far as probability distribution goes. And if you're asking people to use weird, funky shaped dice, be aware that it is sometimes a back-breaking endeavor to require somebody to acquire large numbers of them at short notice.
But there is a certain pleasure, and I think I was listening to one of those podcasts who reminisces about 80s role-playing games. I like that sort of podcast. And one of them was sort of saying how disappointed they were when they got the original Traveller box set, because it just had some normal D6s in it. It felt like a bit of a chiz. Like, the reason you play a hobby game is to get some D8s and some D100s. Like, come on, people. I also think, like, D6s are great and a workhorse, but there's just, yeah, I think it's, you know, there's all these other lovely dice and they're easy to get hold of. And, you know, eBay will provide you a bag of them in a jiffy.
As an anecdote, I was playing a game of Munchkins. As one of the cards in Munchkins says to roll a dice, and if you get more than a certain number, you got a reward, and it didn't specify which dice it was. And a person I was playing with, who was wearing their work clothes, pulled the D20 out of their pocket they just happened to have randomly in their work clothes pocket and rolled that. I thought, yeah, this is my people. these are the, I'm in the right company. I just have a D20 in my pocket and work through the day. You know.
Not only do I have a D20, I'm also using it to troll some rules system.
Yes, okay. So hopefully we've given sufficient coverage to some of the mechanical questions in relation to including dice pools and weird funky shaped dice within
the game. Lovely topic. I love that. I have a unreasonable pleasure in manipulating pools of dice and worrying about which faces of and which directions the numbers should go, and it gives me endless just the act of like going through that design point, that place in the design, I often find very interesting. And I will probably needlessly revisit the dice pool mechanic or the dice mechanics later on in the design, simply because I enjoy that part so much. And I'll happily have another round of reconsidering what the exact right dice is.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully that's answered some questions or at least helped the thought process in relation to this question. Again, if anybody has questions or topics they'd like us to pick up on, this chat was based on a comment in one of our videos. We're more than happy to try and delve in and offer what passes for our wisdom on various subjects.
And if anybody is able to write a D100 dice pool system, then reports to my office.
Open a chat, open a discussion. What is your favorite dice and why? What is the best dice pool used in any given game, and why is it so splendidly evocative and effective? Other than that, hit us up on social media, and for now we're gonna say goodbye from this episode of Rule of Carnage. So bye 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 bye
bye bye goodbye.